Nikki Strong, and this is VOA One of the Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lin, Susan Shen, and Dan Friedel. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will continue our series on America's national parks. But first, the Taliban on Monday announced a 3-day ceasefire for the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Fitr. The holiday marks the end of the holy month of Ramadan this week. Hours later, however, a roadside bombing killed 11 people on a bus in eastern Afghanistan as the country experiences continued acts of violence. No one has claimed responsibility for the bombing. After the Taliban ceasefire announcement, the government in Kabul called for a permanent truce. A statement from the presidential palace criticized the Taliban for the increasing violence, but said the government would also observe the holiday ceasefire. The Taliban said the ceasefire would begin on either Wednesday or Thursday. It will be decided on the sighting of the new moon that marks the start of the holiday. The announcement follows an attack on a girls' school on Saturday in Kabul that killed as many as 60 people. The number of dead continues to increase. Many of the dead are students between 11 and 15 years old. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack, and the Taliban have said they did not do it. The attack happened in a mostly Shiite neighborhood in western Kabul. Past attacks there have been carried out by a group linked to the Islamic State. The Afghan president said Tuesday will be a national day of mourning for the victims. Hours after the Taliban announcement, a bus in southern Zabul province struck a roadside bomb, said Interior Ministry spokesman Tariq Aryan. The explosion killed 11, and at least 24 more people on the bus were wounded. Taliban spokesman Suhail Shaheen said Taliban fighters have been ordered to stop all operations to provide a peaceful and secure atmosphere to our compatriots so they can celebrate the religious holiday. The U.S. and NATO are withdrawing the last of their military forces from Afghanistan. The final 2,500 to 3,500 American soldiers and about 7,000 allied NATO forces will leave by September 11th. Since the withdrawal began, the Taliban have increased their battlefield attacks on the Afghan army, capturing new territory. Also on Monday, Pakistan's army chief, General Qamar Javed Bajwa, was in Kabul. There were no other details about his visit. Pakistani leaders were important to the process of getting the Taliban to agree to peace talks. However, the Taliban-Afghan government negotiations have been frozen for months now, although the U.S. has tried to push both sides to an agreement.
A major U.S. fuel pipeline remains largely shut down Monday after a cyber attack caused service to be suspended. The incident reported Friday, led to the shutdown of a main fuel line operated by Colonial Pipeline, a company based in Georgia. The pipeline carries gasoline and other fuel from Texas to the U.S. Northeast. The company says it supplies about 45% of all the fuel used on the U.S. East Coast. Some are considering the cyber attack the most damaging so far against important U.S. infrastructure. Colonial said Monday it hopes to have most of its fuel transportation system running again by the end of the week. The company is in the process of restarting its network, which transports over 2.5 million barrels of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel each day. The company says it was hit by a ransomware attack. In such attacks, online attackers infect the computer systems of organizations and hijack information in a way that leaves it unreadable. The attacker then demands payment in exchange for returning the information to a readable state. Law enforcement agencies are investigating the incident. The Federal Bureau of Investigation said Monday the attack was carried out by a criminal group known as DarkSide. A news release issued Monday in the name of DarkSide stated its purpose but did not name Colonial Pipeline, Reuters news agency reported. "Our goal is to make money and not creating problems for society," the group said. Cybersecurity experts who have studied DarkSide say the group appears to be made up of experienced cyber criminals who aim to get as much money as they can from their targets. "They're very new, but they're very organized," said Lior Div, chief of Cyber Reason, a security company based in Boston. DarkSide claims it does not attack hospitals, nursing homes, or educational or government targets. It says it donates part of the money it receives to charity. Like most other major ransomware groups, it is known to avoid targeting organizations in former Soviet bloc nations. This suggests a link to former Soviet republics. The administration of President Joe Biden said it has made restarting the fuel network a top goal. The administration said it is working with several agencies on plans to avoid severe fuel disruptions. If a shutdown continues, fuel suppliers would need to use trucks and trains to transport fuel. The Department of Transportation announced emergency measures Sunday to keep deliveries moving. The agency lifted driver restrictions on fuel transporters in 17 states affected by the shutdown. Experts said gasoline prices are not likely to be affected if the pipeline is able to restart operations in the next few days. I'm Brian Lynn.
It is a place of sadness. A child, perhaps 2.5 or 3 years old, buried under the overhang of a cave, the upper part of the body once carefully wrapped in a cloth. Scientists said last week they have found the oldest known human burial in Africa, the continent that gave rise to our species. The area dates to about 78,000 years ago, at a cave called Panga ya Saidi near the Kenyan coast. Scientists called the child Mtoto, which means child in Swahili. The discovery explains some of the development of early social behaviors in human species, known as Homo sapiens, researchers say. Maria Martinon Torres is the director of the National Research Center on Human Evolution in Spain. Martinon Torres said the child was buried near where he lived. She added, only humans treat the dead with the same respect, consideration, and even tenderness they treat the living. Even when we die, we continue to be someone for our group. Human species first appeared in Africa more than 300,000 years ago, later spreading worldwide. The remains of the bones were found in a round hole. They were secured in plaster and later taken to the research center for study. The researchers believe that the child was placed in the grave with his knees upward, lying on his side. It is not yet known if the child is a male or female. The body was fresh when it was buried, then quickly covered with dirt from the floor of the cave. This would likely have been a group act, perhaps by members of the child's family. All of these behaviors are, of course, very similar to those observed in our own species today, so we can relate to this act, even though the burial dates to 78,000 years ago, said study co-author Nicole Boyvan. She is an archaeologist and director at the Max Planck Institute for the Science of Human History in Germany. The researchers wondered about the special meaning of the child's burial. It is unclear when funereal behavior began, but both Homo sapiens and its closely related species, Neanderthal, practiced it. Martinon Torres called it a type of behavior that allow us to maintain links with those who died and offer a farewell. The oldest Neanderthal burial area in Israel dates to about 120,000 years ago, similar in age to the oldest known Homo sapiens burial, also in Israel, Boyvan said. The researchers said it is unclear whether funereal behavior began outside Africa and was later practiced in Africa, or began in Africa. There is not enough archaeological evidence to know. I'm Susan Shand.
Thanks to her two girls, Kim Zuckman spent a lot of time making popular American foods like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, chicken fingers, hot dogs, and pizza. Her girls are adults now, but when they were young, Zuckman also learned a lot about books written for children. I just got hooked on children's books myself. I just really love them, she said. Zuckman wrote for newspapers and magazines, but she wanted to try writing a children's book. With the recent publication of There's No Ham in Hamburgers, she has. Zuckman said it was not easy to learn how to write for children. She had to learn to use clearer vocabulary and shorter sentences. She said, "It's been a long process, a learning process." The book is about the history of American foods like cookies, chocolate, and cereal. When Zachman first had the idea of writing the book, most publishing companies were not interested. But that was before chefs got famous and television was filled with cooking shows, some of which featured children. Now, times have changed, and kids are interested in food, she said. One of her favorite kid food stories is about the first breaded, boneless chicken pieces, now known as nuggets. No one had found a way to cover the chicken pieces with a bread mixture that could be frozen and then stay on when cooked. When that finally happened, chicken nuggets started selling at McDonald's restaurants all over the world in the early 1980s.
You know, we had fried chicken for hundreds and hundreds of years. Why not the chicken nugget? And it really wasn't, that was a technological challenge. It was actually, that really required a lot of technology to make it happen. So that surprised me that this little chicken nugget was such a big deal and we didn't have it sooner.
Zachman said she had fun learning some of the stories behind the foods people love to eat. Each story includes history, fun facts, food nutrients, and even cooking directions or recipes, in case people want to try to make the foods themselves. Did you know, for example, that all it takes to make a really good peanut butter cookie is about 128 grams each of peanut butter and sugar plus one egg? Divide the mixture into small equal pieces onto a baking surface, flatten them with a fork, and then bake at 176 degrees Celsius for about 10 minutes. Some American foods are actually versions of food brought to the U.S. by immigrants. For example, hamburgers came from Germany, but the food became popular when someone in America put them on a round piece of bread. Speaking of something else that is round, pizza was a food eaten by poor people in Italy for hundreds of years. In 1905, an Italian immigrant named Gennaro Lombardi opened the first pizza place in New York City. Now, New York-style pizza is famous around the world. Zachman said immigrants added to American food culture in many ways.
Because the immigrants came over and they some could find jobs, but some had a hard time finding jobs. So they would be entrepreneurs and start this little food business, a little food truck business kind of thing to get going.
Now, not every story in Zachman's book is true. Some were passed down for generations and are still unproven. But one might argue that the more interesting food stories are the true ones. For example, pepperoni is not a traditional pizza addition in Italy. It is an American creation thought to have been started by German immigrants who wanted a spicy sausage. Anyone who watches American television probably knows that children love peanut butter and jelly spread between two pieces of bread, known as a sandwich. But it did not start with kids. The peanut butter and jelly sandwich got its start with American soldiers in World War I and stayed popular among soldiers through the 1940s. When soldiers returned home after World War II, they started making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for their children. There are a lot of brands of peanut butter in the food store today, but Zuckman discovered that in 1910, there were 21 different brands of peanut butter in the U.S. state of Kansas alone. Zuckman's book has 10 parts. She said she would have liked to write about more foods, but she ran out of space. I'm Dan Friedel.
Today, we visit a national park that stretches across two southern U.S. states, Tennessee and North Carolina, and two mountain ranges, the Blue Ridge and the Appalachian. The area is known for its wildflowers, autumn colors, waterfalls, and black bears. It is also known for the blue-colored mist that hangs above mountain peaks and valleys. It looks like smoke and gave the area its name. Today, we are exploring the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. We are hardly alone on our journey. The Great Smoky Mountains National Park gets more visitors than any other.
Starting in the 1920s, local citizens began working to protect the land. Ann Davis moved to Knoxville, Tennessee in 1915. She soon came to love the Great Smoky Mountains. In 1923, Davis visited some of the national parks in the western United States. She proposed creation of a national park to protect the Smokies after she returned home. Ann Davis entered politics to help push the idea. In 1925, she became the first female from her county to serve in the Tennessee State House of Representatives. She proposed a bill to permit the purchase of more than 30,000 hectares of land from the Little River Lumber Company. That was the first huge purchase of land used to create the national park. In 1934, Tennessee and North Carolina gave the federal government more than 300,000 hectares of land for the park. The Great Smoky Mountains National Park was established on June 15, 1934. But the official dedication did not take place until 1940, when President Franklin Roosevelt spoke at a ceremony within the park. The ceremony took place at the Rockefeller Monument, on the border between the two states that provided the land. Roosevelt said that day, "It is good and right that we should conserve these mountain heights of the old frontier for the benefit of the American people."
Most years, around 9 million people visit the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. It is the largest area of protected land east of the Rocky Mountains, and it is one of the few national parks that is free to enter. The park has over 1,000 kilometers of trails, more than 110 kilometers of the world-famous Appalachian Trail cuts through the Smokies. So, you might share the trail with a hiker in the middle of a months-long walk from Georgia all the way north to Maine. Visitors also share the park with a large population of black bears. The park is one of the biggest protected areas in the eastern U.S. where wild black bears live. Black bears once roamed a huge part of North America, but the populations suffered because of habitat loss. Scientists say around 1,500 black bears live in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Park officials work hard to protect them and warn visitors not to get close to bears or leave behind trash that would harm the bears.
Many visitors come to the park to view wildlife. One of the most popular places to do so is in an area called Cades Cove. Here, visitors can see white-tailed deer, the dog-like coyote, turkeys, and yes, black bears. Cades Cove is a valley. It has a long and rich history. The Cherokee Indians used to hunt there. The first European settlers arrived in the early 1800s. In the 1830s, around 270 people lived in Cades Cove. Today, many kinds of historic buildings and structures remain in the valley, including log houses, barns, churches, and a working mill. Cades Cove is also an excellent place to view wildflowers. The park is famous for its wildflower diversity. Within the park are more than 1,500 kinds of flowers, more than any other national park in the country. Another famous spot in the Great Smoky Mountains is Clingman's Dome. It is the highest point within the park. At the top of the 2,024-meter-tall mountain is an observation tower. It offers viewers a 360-degree view of the Smokies and surrounding areas.
Unfortunately, the park has faced air pollution problems. The pollution harms the views atop Clingman's Dome and other scenic spots in the park. The Cherokee Indians who lived in the area used to call these mountains Shakonajee, which means place of the blue smoke. Today, the blue-gray smoke that surrounds the mountains is no longer pure. Some of it is just air pollution. Most comes from electric power centers and cars. The pollution damages native plants and water streams. It also affects the views from the scenic overlooks. It can make the mountain colors appear less bright and beautiful. The National Park Service suggests that visitors by car consider using public transportation from the city of Gatlinburg, Tennessee. A trolley car takes visitors to many stops within the park. The millions of visitors to this beautiful part of America have a special responsibility to preserve the land that many worked so hard to protect. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.